Let me just make two quick announcements before we get going. This evening, Susan Rice, the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, will deliver a speech at New York University's Center for Global Affairs. She will detail how the United States is changing the course it charts in the world. That is at 5:30 p.m. At the New York School of Law. And the second announcement, on Monday, President Obama will give a speech to the 110th VFW National Convention in Phoenix, Arizona. President Obama will be discussing our responsibility to maintain the world's finest military in the 21st century, to give our troops and veterans the care, the benefits, and the respect that they have earned. That is on Monday. And I think I'm relatively organized. I don't think that's I don't. He did. We didn't last year. I don't think that format will be that way. Just a speech. Yes, sir.
Report today that Ambassador Eikenberg said a lot more money needs to be spent, $2.5 billion, if there's to be success or progress next year in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. Talking about development, civilian projects. How's that fallen in the White House? What kind of reaction has there been to that request?
Well, Steve, as you know, when the president first came into office, we conducted an initial assessment of our policy as it related to Afghanistan and Pakistan, understanding, as the president had said throughout the campaign, that we had under-resourced our efforts in those areas. He already requested $2.8 billion in assistance for Afghanistan. And the president certainly agrees that, as he said during the campaign about our efforts in the Afghanistan and Pakistan region as well as in Iraq, that a military solution alone was not possible, that we have to figure out how, through using all elements and all tools of our national power, including development assistance, how we can best attain our goals in that region. As you know, that review continues. The president ordered an increase in troop strength leading up to in Afghanistan, leading up to the important elections that will be held in only a few days by the Afghans. And we anticipate that an assessment of a further assessment by Ambassador Eikenberry and by General McChrystal will come in mid-September after those elections.
But in particular, this request that would nearly double, it appears.
Well, I think the president wants to, as I assume both the Secretary of State, the Secretary of Defense, want to evaluate not elements of, but a package for a different strategy for this region, which the president has long advocated. We'll do that as part of an entire package. But I will say, the president has requested as part of that budget a substantial increase in our assistance to that region, understanding, as he said in many speeches at the beginning of this administration, that we are going to have to build things. We're going to have to build a civil society and a governing structure in that country as a way of winning hearts and minds. Yes, sir.
Robert, a question on executive compensation. On Friday, some big companies like Bank of America, Citigroup, GM, have to turn in their executive pay plans to the Treasury Department. First question on that is, will that be made public?
I don't believe so, but you should ask Treasury for the specific answer to that. But I'm not of the impression that's the case, no.
And along those lines, how concerned is the administration still about executive pay? Less than a year after the banking crisis, banks are beginning to make money again, and it seems like they're paying some traders and executives a great deal. Is that still an issue of concern?
Well, two things on that, Jeff. One, as you know, the president's what he believes is an important proposal to give shareholders a say on executive pay. that's had impacts in other countries is moving its way through Congress, and we're very pleased about that. We hope that's ultimately part of legislation that gets quickly to his desk that will have an impact. Secondly, the president continues to believe, as he has long before he got here, compensation has to be based on not on reckless risk-taking, but on value that you're providing and doing so in a way that doesn't jeopardize your firm or taxpayers. That's what the president has talked about. I don't think the American people begrudge that people make big salaries, as long as they're not jeopardizing the goodwill of the public in doing so. And I think that will ultimately be the test of all of this.
A couple questions. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you think it's unfair to say, but it occurs to me that if the president finds himself at a town hall meeting telling the American people that he does not want to set up a panel to kill their grandparents, that perhaps they're, at some point, the president has lost control of the message. And I'm wondering if what you've seen in the last few weeks is one of the reasons why it was so important to the president earlier this year to pass health care reform in the House and Senate before the August recess. Is everything that's going on right now what you feared would happen?
No, I a lot of ways to take this question. I'm trying to figure out which avenue to drive down. Do you just say yes and go to the next? Certainly one way of doing it. Let me split these up a little bit. I think there's a tremendous amount of disinformation that's out there. We've seen it, and look, let's be honest. You all, the media, tend to cover X said this, Y said this, but some of you, but not everyone, does an investigation about whether what X said is actually true. Now, that's not a blanket statement. Not every one of you is that way.
We've called
right.
the death panels false.
Right.
I don't know what more you want from us.
I don't think everybody's called them false. I think a lot of people have done stories about, again, it's he said, she said. No pun intended, because actually she said it. I don't think there's any doubt that in some ways, I think some of you were disappointed yesterday that the president didn't get yelled at. Sure. I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Were you disappointed the president didn't get
yelled at? I was going to yell at him just to make
it.
The president wanted to have what happened, which was a rational discussion about health care reform legislation. I think that's what ensued. Did everybody agree? I think the answer to that is obviously no. I think what the president said, which was important, is let's have a conversation where we talk to one another, not over one another. I do think there was some disappointment because a bunch of your stories had more to do with the fact of the sideshow on each side of the street outside than what was actually going on inside of the town hall. But we've Jake, going back to the campaign, we've always thought it more important to take disinformation that anybody may have about a proposal or something that the president is trying to do and address directly that misinformation. I think that's the most important thing. The notion that did we always expect this was going to happen? I said this before. I don't think the president's ever done a town hall meeting where everybody agreed with what he was proposing or what he said. I think the president believes that the town hall meeting is a structure where people can discuss those issues in a way that they think, the way that he believes, engenders a positive discussion. I think that's what he gained yesterday.
But is this what you feared would happen? Is this one of the reasons he wanted it passed before the August recess?
The president wants to get through the process of getting something to his desk, because delay now simply means, as the president, I think, discussed very succinctly yesterday, it means delay means more people are going to get discriminated against on the basis of a pre-existing condition. More people are going to lose their insurance because they get too sick. More people are going to get thrown off their insurance because their employer can no longer afford to pay it. That's the reason the president wants to see this done as quickly as possible.
Who decides which of the many applicants for tickets to the town halls is actually chosen?
Randomly by computer.
Totally random.
Mm-hmm. What about who gets a question?
The president asks people to raise their hands and picks on them.
What do you think accounts for the stark difference in the scenes, though? I mean, we saw people were very polite with the president yesterday. They are, shall we say, less than polite with some lawmakers you saw.
Some lawmakers. I don't know that. I'll be honest with you, Cheryl. I don't know how many town hall meetings you've been to over the summer.
Been to that many, but I've watched the clips of a fair number of them.
Right, but let's just address that for a second. You've watched clips put up about certain segments of certain town halls in order to demonstrate the consternation.
Clips to know that the president didn't get that kind of treatment I'm just asking
you to compare that to all the town halls that you've been to over the summer.
Aside from that, the president didn't get that kind of treatment, and I'm wondering, do you think, is it just that people are more polite when it comes to talking to the president? Is it something in the way folks are allowed into your meetings, or what's the difference?
Again, I think I'm sensing your disappointment that he didn't get yelled at.
No, I'm not disappointed. I'm just wondering what the explanation is for it.
I think people wanted to, I don't want to speak to what other town hall meetings, because I only go to the president's. It's hard for me to I doubt we're seeing a representative sample of any series of town hall meetings, despite the food fight on cable every day. My sense is that people wanted to take the opportunity to find out from the president, to have him answer their questions about why he's doing what he's doing and the concerns they may have on the legislation. That's why when he asked, let's take some questions from those directly that have some concerns, at that point I think, you know, do you want to take that opportunity to have a discussion with the President of the United States about what he wants to see on health care reform? I think most people took that opportunity as something that was positive. I think it was a good conversation. I think the president thought it was a very productive conversation about the issues that we were dealing with. And as Jake said, the president, you know, went out of his way to bring up, in fact, some of the misinformation that churns out there in order to address it, because I think obviously he understands he has a pulpit that is large enough to deal with some of the misinformation that some people might not ordinarily ask or inquire about because they've read it somewhere and they just assume that it's true, even if it's not.
What do you think is the biggest obstacle to passing this legislation?
The special interest.
And
the people that want to keep the status quo. The people that believe that somehow what we have is working for the millions of Americans who are watching their healthcare premiums skyrocket every day, who are watching small businesses drop their coverage, who are part of the 12.5 million people over the past 3 years that have been told by an insurance company in seeking to buy insurance on a private market that they're not eligible because of what somebody has decided, there's a pre-existing condition. I think that would be what the president would believe is the greatest obstacle and has been for 40 years. There are people that have a vested, in some senses, monetary interest in keeping things as they are.
Isn't it his fault, though, that he's not getting the message across?
Well,
misinformation?
I don't think the president was under any illusion that with his presidency with the ascendance of his presidency, that would be the end of misinformation. I do think the president believes, look, I'm sure there are communications experts that would tell you, well, anytime you're, you know, what's the old thing? If you're explaining, you're losing. Well, I think the president believes these town halls provide an excellent opportunity to explain exactly what his ideas and principles are. And more importantly, if he can affect misinformation by telling people what isn't in a piece of legislation, I think he'll take that opportunity. Dan?
In addition to the town halls and the website to knock down these myths, is the White House considering other venues to try to correct the record, if you will?
I don't specifically...
Are you thinking of doing anything else, or is there the need to do anything else?
Well, I mean, you know, we've got two town halls later in the week, one in Montana, one in Colorado. Then the president has, he'll be back here for a bit and then some downtime with his family. Look, I don't doubt we'll take this battle up in some earnestness in September, but I don't think there are any specific venue announcements. Again, I think the president believes the format of the town hall in the ability to discuss directly with people what their cares and concerns are, he finds to be and always has been tremendously valuable.
And is there any concern at all that if this misinformation machine continues and the record can't be corrected as the White House would like it to be, that it could potentially make it more difficult to get health care reform across the
country? Well, look, if the debate is dominated by something that's not true, of course. I don't think the president believes, though, that when all is said and done, that most people will make their decisions on something that is false and something that has been said is false. I rant on cable a little bit, Dan, as you in your exhaling noted in answering another question. You know, take a couple questions at a town hall meeting. You guys, Lord knows, have shown enough video of people with concerns about the bill. Take one of those concerns and address its factualness.
So do you think now that so much attention is being focused on the myths and debunking the myths that in essence will help you?
I do. I think if people believe for some reason that this plan is government controlled health care, which it's not, if the president can address that each time he goes out there and more people believe the truth, then sure, that helps. I think that helps the prospect of millions to see health care reform this year. Yes, ma'am.
It seemed yesterday the president, speaking of disappointed, really wanted, he was sort of soliciting tough questions and casting about for a real skeptic in the audience and not really finding one. And there was maybe one or two.
I'm not sure.
Well, I mean,
right,
there was the one Republican and then the guy at the end.
Right. I did read in a few leads yesterday afternoon that the president addressed skeptics of his health care plan, but maybe that was...
Okay, maybe it was 100% great. I don't know. It seemed that
way. No. I'm pointing out that at least yesterday afternoon, the perception among many of the stories I read was that the president had addressed some skeptics.
Okay. He was asking the audience, who's a skeptic? He seemed to be soliciting tougher questions.
Right.
So to the extent that there weren't as many of those folks present as we've seen in other town halls, not necessarily yellers, but people who have legitimate concerns. Is there anything that you guys can do going forward as you approach these town halls to get an audience that's more representative of divergent views? For example,
first of all, I don't have any questions the president took yesterday, 8. I don't know how many we'd say or people that were, at least the last two, because he took those from that. I don't remember. I guess the Republican was one of those two, right? The guy who said he didn't know why he was here. There was the gentleman, I think the third question, I was sitting on the left-hand side, so it would have been the right-hand side, a question about Medicaid and Lipitor. That's at least 3 of the 8 questions is not being, they were in some ways skeptical. What I'm saying is, I don't, I'm not assuming that the audience wasn't in some ways representative. Again, I sense disappointment that he didn't get yelled at. I think there were a number of people in there that had concerns and wanted to ask the president directly. I think we're going to continue to pick people randomly to come to a town hall meeting, and you know they'll raise their hand and the president will ask.
A smaller fraction of the audience, those tickets, as I understand it, go to the offices through elected officials.
I think Bill told you guys to pull that on Sunday or Monday.
Yes, right. Smaller fraction. Would you but to Democratic lawmakers, would you consider in an attempt to have a more open debate, would you consider, for example, in Montana, giving to the Republican congressman?
Savannah, I think the president feels very comfortable with the fact that he's having a representative discussion despite people's disappointment that he wasn't yelled at. Yes, John?
No,
yeah. I don't doubt that.
you know, if you look at the protests that we saw outside of the building yesterday as a kind of a continuum from the tea parties and then the controversy over the birth certificate and then some of the anger over the Gates Crowley episode. You look back at that.
I didn't go in the front door, so I don't know. I don't doubt that, but I'm saying I don't know. I didn't see a representative sample of the signs. Just. Yeah.
But what I was going to say is, this is a president who campaigned on the notion that we could get beyond the ugly partisan warfare of the last 16 years, and that there could be, you know, rational discussion that could bring parties together. And I wonder what happened to that. Why did the post-partisan presidency not materialize?
Jonathan, I don't know if you were outside or inside, but I think there was a rational discussion about issues not based on ideology or party inside the town hall meeting. It's not for me to – I can't tell you why somebody believes, despite all preponderance of the evidence, that the president was born here and not somewhere else. I've stopped trying to explain that. I did see a poll yesterday where 8% of the people said they didn't know if Hawaii was or weren't sure whether Hawaii was a state. So I don't know if that's caused some consternation.
In the South of the United States now, among self-identified white-collar workers, about a quarter of those people identify themselves as feeling very negative to this president. It's a quarter. I mean, obviously, the vast majority aren't saying that. But it just seemed like there was an emergence of,
white collar?
People who identify themselves as white collar workers. There seems to be an emergence of a core group of, people who feel very strongly negative, whereas at inauguration, I think it was only 6% that said that.
Well, look, Jonathan, I don't think the president ever believed that all the people were going to agree with him all of the time, or even that certainly that all the people could even agree with him a majority of the time. I think you can have the effort to talk about issues differently, to disagree on issues without being disagreeable about it, to have those type of discussions, to talk about how we deal with the issues that haven't been confronted for years and years. You're still not going to get 100% of the people all the time. You may not get most of the people all of the time. I think the president will continue to reach out to Democrats and Republicans for ideas, both in Washington and outside of Washington. Continue to find a way to bridge the differences that we have and seek common sense solutions. I think that's what he's tried to do since he's come into office. Peter?
What individuals or groups do you think are the biggest purveyors of the disinformation and misinformation that you keep mentioning?
I don't know. I think you've seen certain elected officials give out information that was wrong. You've seen
who?
Sarah Palin gave out information that I think many of you all pointed out was wrong just on Friday. So that's one. There's certainly countless others. Well, fair enough. That's I promoted her, I guess, to current Alaska governor rather than former. Obviously, there are. Look, you watch. I watch TV. You watch different groups that are coming to these meetings that are saying stuff that just isn't true. The president will continue, though, to try to address that. I think he thinks that's a positive thing, so that people that want to make an informed decision about this stuff will have all the information they need to do it.
To what extent does he hope to, shall we say, lower the temperature of the debate by doing what he did yesterday and going out again in the West later this week?
Well, I don't know that it's a lower the temperature. I think it's just a way of discussing this in understanding that, agree or not, people rightly have questions, and the president's happy to answer those questions. And I think he's always seen that. He's always seen this as a way of town halls as a way of doing that. I think the president also came into office understanding and believing that, as I've said here many times before, that whether people agree with you or not, he thinks it's important to say, here's why I'm doing these things. Here's why I'm making the decisions that I'm making. Here's why the issue that we're dealing with is important for our long-term economic growth and laying that foundation. You know, I think he believes that that type of continued dialogue with the American people is tremendously important. Joanne?
Following up on Jeff's question, it's been reported that the executive compensation proposals, that they will be made public at some point, but done in a way that preserves the privacy of the individuals at these firms. Is that something
I don't know. I think Jeff's question was, and I don't want to infer that were the proposals that were handed in by the deadline of Friday, were those simply going to be made public? I thought I doubted that, but I would check with you guys should check with Treasury on the specifics of that.
On all the process.
Yeah, at some point, obviously, I think, as I understand it, Mr. Feinberg has up to 60 days to review and make decisions about those. And obviously, at some point, that decision will be a public decision.
But you're wrong in saying people are concerned that these high salaries and bonuses are being given while their tax money is being used and so on.
Well, I didn't say that there wasn't concern for that. I said I didn't think people begrudged people making money if they're doing it in something that is not based on a risk that's going to put somebody else's tax money in danger. I think people don't want the President of the United States making every business decision and every economic decision. I know the President believes that, and I believe. Oh, no. That's why the President talks about it. The President, look, the President didn't come at this, the President came at this upset as many taxpayers were in reading this stuff.
Lined out, obviously there's a say on pay that he's a big proponent of, but what he'd like to ultimately see some of the goals, and with the government having a vested interest now in the firms that kind of that Ken Feinberg has jurisdiction over, mm-hmm. Has the president talked about needing to balance compensation restrictions with making sure that they're not at a competitive disadvantage?
Well, I don't know that I've heard him enumerate it quite like that. I think he has. Obviously, we've had a number of discussions about executive compensation and ensuring that more in the way of ensuring, as I said earlier, that we don't have compensation that's based on outsized, irresponsible risk-taking.
So the competitiveness is not a top concern?
I think I've heard it mentioned, but I don't know that I've heard the president discuss something like that.
The economics team in this administration and over here at the White House, is it important to see that the these firms remain uncompetitive?
Well, again, without getting into the specific compensation issues of these firms, obviously we have a monetary taxpayers have a monetary interest in ensuring that places like GM and others do well. That's not to say anybody's going to cut corners, but obviously we've seen banks already this year repay money. We've seen them repay with interest. Warrants on stock options have been sold in order to get money back to the government, and I think the president wants to see that money rightly returned to the taxpayers. Major.
Will Chairman Baucus be with the president at the event in Montana?
Yes.
So they'll do it jointly?
No. I think he'll be in attendance. He's not an introducer or he's not a participant. He's been pre-screened.
Right. But he won't be answering questions or anything like that. He's just there. Okay. Yesterday the president said AARP endorsed the plan. As you're aware, yesterday AARP said it hasn't endorsed a plan. Where on the information or disinformation scale would the president's remark fall?
Well, the president said, AARP has said they are certainly supportive and have been for years on comprehensive health reform. I don't think the president meant to imply anything untoward. I think he discussed the notion that AARP is supportive of legislation, an agreement that would fund filling the donut hole for seniors as part of Medicare Part D, as well as additional savings for comprehensive health care.
The president is doubtless aware AARP hasn't even endorsed the House pending committee legislation
which is the Senate legislation.
Right. So he's aware of that. So he wasn't trying to mislead anyone.
No.
He just misspoke.
Right.
Is that something that can happen in this debate?
That people can misspeak?
Right, but not without intentionally meaning to mislead.
Sure. I don't know if it's happened on certain subjects, but yeah.
So it's within the range of this whole discussion, something can be wrong, but not necessarily intentional disinformation is what I'm getting at.
I think most of what the president has addressed, though, has been in many ways intentional misinformation.
That he's been trying to correct.
Right.
Understood. All right. Senator Isaacson put out a statement yesterday also taking issue with what the president described his position and his involvement in the end-of-life legislation in the House. Do you want to amend or correct anything the president said or you said about that? Because Mr. Isaacson has a completely different interpretation than the president used and you used yesterday.
Well,
he had no role in the House legislation. He opposes the language in the House.
Well, I didn't say, let's take what I talked about on the back of the plane. And let me just read the question, a series of questions and answers from Senator Isaacson. How did this become a question of euthanasia? Senator Isaacson, I have no idea. I understand, and you have to check this out. I just had a phone call where someone said Sarah Palin's website had talked about the House bill having death panels on it where people would be euthanized. How someone could take an end-of-life directive or a living will as that is nuts. You're putting the authority in the individual rather than the government. I don't know how that got so mixed up. Question two. You're saying this is not a question of government, it's for individuals. Senator Isaacson. It empowers you to be able to make decisions at a difficult time rather than having the government make them for you. Question three. The policy here, as I understand it, is that Medicare would cover a counseling session with your doctor on end-of-life options. Senator Isaacson. Correct. And it's a voluntary deal.
I believe those are answers in response to his amendment in the health bill. Not the longer and more defined involvement of these end-of-life panels that's in the House bill. That's how it's been explained to me by his people. So I'm just wondering.
Right.
If
well, I don't. I would ask then those people to interpret. I just had a phone call where someone said Sarah Palin's website said website had talked about the House bill having death panels on it where people would be euthanized. How someone could take an end of life directive or a living will as that is nuts. Not my words.
No, I understand.
Yes.
But what the president talked about yesterday was saying that Senator Isaacson had some role and helping well, think to craft the or develop the House
I think what the president mentioned was
that implying that he supported it. And I'm just saying that Senator Isaacson denies that he had any role and he doesn't support it.
Again, I don't think that's what the president was implying. I think what the president – I think the president mentioned that Mr. Isaacson had been in the House. That may have been some of the confusion. I think that's – he was a member of
–
did obviously represent Atlanta suburbs before becoming this U.S. senator from Georgia. I think, what the president was trying to say was in this – was in a question about some of the misinformation, asked specifically about euthanasia and death panels – And I think, and I said this also on the back of the plane yesterday, I think what Senator Isaacson says in addressing that misinformation could not be more clear.
Right.
That for someone to take, as he says, talked about the House bill, his words, not mine, having death panels on it where people would be euthanized, how somebody could come up with that, roughly paraphrased, and that sentence is nuts.
Right. I'm not trying to beat this into the ground, but he doesn't support the language in the House bill. You can have differences over
what I understand. What I'm saying is I think there may be some
end of life counseling is, and be clear to understand that neither of them calls for anything approaching.
Right. I mean, look, I think the one thing that
setting that aside for a second.
I mean, again, what one
he
thing that
back it, the House language
no, I understand.
Had no role in it,
I understand.
And believes that yesterday there was comments from the president that indicated.
I didn't read it. I certainly didn't read it that way, and I don't think my comments
should be interpreted.
Well, I didn't say that, so to interpret it that way would be nuts.
He's too sensitive about it.
I read what he said in an interview that was posted on WashingtonPost.com yesterday. I think if you go back and look at some amendments that he's offered and co-sponsored, right, but he's offered and co-sponsored other amendments with Senator Rockefeller in dealing with this. I think whether this is uncomfortable or not, I think he and the president agree. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Rob.
I want to go back to the earlier question about the AARP. And what he actually said was AARP would not be endorsing a bill if it was undermining Medicare. What exactly, how did he, can you explain to me how he misspoke and what he meant to say?
I think, again, what he's conflating is one, and I think if you ask AARP this, they have been supportive of comprehensive health care reform for a long time. They have not, as they said, endorsed a specific piece of legislation. They are supportive of health care reform, and they are supportive of an agreement that the Finance Committee and pharmaceutical manufacturers have entered into that the White House agrees with that would use $80 billion to partially fill with reduced price prescription drugs 50% of the donut hole that seniors fall into at a certain level as part of Medicare Part D, as well as some of that additional money for savings in comprehensive health care reform.
But he left the impression twice, to anyone, at least to me, sitting in the town hall meeting, that that AARP supported this, and he used it to rebut the questions about whether Medicare benefits would be cut. So is he going to not do that in the future town
hall?
Well,
the president's going to continue to say the bill doesn't cut Medicare benefits. I think, again, the president was talking about the agreement structured with the Finance Committee and the pharmaceutical manufacturers.
Can I follow up on the Senate Finance Committee?
Sure, why not?
President complimented Grassley, Enzi, and Snow yesterday for trying to get a bipartisan plan out. Mm-hmm. Baucus has also said he'd like a plan out by mid-September.
Well,
so,
Senator Baucus and Senator Grassley said they wanted a plan in June.
I know, but the point being, now they're shooting for mid-September. President said he hoped to get a plan out. This was based on what he said yesterday. But he wants to get this done.
Mm-hmm.
So does there come a point where he wants this bill out of Senate Finance alone, regardless of whether there's bipartisan support?
Well, I don't want to get into those dates except to say he's appreciative that those senators on both the Democratic and the Republican side are working together. They're making progress, as they say, toward an agreement, and we're hopeful that they'll do so. That's the last of the committees of jurisdiction to finish a bill and ultimately head to both, ultimately to go to the Senate floor. Obviously, the House has done their work and can go there as well.
Thank you.
Margaret?
I wanted to ask you on a different subject entirely about the Medal of Freedom, and if you would talk a little bit about if you've had any conversations with the President, what he's told you about what that experience is like, selecting an array of people that have made their mark on American society and perhaps has made a mark on him as well. And I'm wondering specifically if you would talk about the impact of Sidney Poitier and of Senator Kennedy and why he chose them.
Well, obviously, the President wanted to pick those individuals that, as the medal talks about this year, who are agents of change. I think, obviously, Senator Kennedy is somebody who, for decades in Washington, has worked to improve health care, to improve education, to help millions send their children to college. I don't think there's a piece of legislation that has affected health care or education in 40 years that doesn't bear some imprint of his effort in making the lives of millions and millions of Americans better, giving them opportunities that wouldn't have normally existed unless you were a member of a certain family or wealthy. Obviously, there are others in this category that the President is honoring today. I think this, obviously, I think it means a lot to recognize the efforts of many of these individuals, somebody like Senator Kennedy, who's had such a profound impact on our public policy debates. And again, as I said, the outcomes of so many pieces of legislation that have made a genuine difference in the lives of so many people.
Poitier, and also, is there any chance, since Senator Kennedy won't be here today, that the President would have an opportunity to present the honor in person? Because that's something that you talked about.
I don't know. I know Senator Kennedy's daughter is here today, accepting the award on on his behalf. Obviously, somebody like Sidney Poitier is somebody who, whose actions broke barriers and paved the way for so many others in so many aspects of life. I think obviously the President is enormously grateful for those efforts and for many that he will be recognizing today.
Any second thoughts on Mary Robinson given the opposition from Jewish groups?
No, I think the President is recognizing her for her for her leadership on women's rights and equal rights, and as I've said before, he doesn't agree with each of her statements, but she's certainly somebody who should be honored.
Robert, you know, you're talking about people who are breaking barriers and things that on the racial aspect. Are you talking about Sidney Poitier, Desmond Tutu, as well as Joseph Lowery today? But you know, this healthcare debate has boiled down to, in some parts of the country, into a racial issue. Has the President gone into that matter, looked at it? Has he talked about it? Has he called David Scott? The swastika issue on his sign, David Scott has said, look, that this was not meant for me, it was meant for the President. What does the President mean?
I haven't seen those comments. Look, I would say, I think I've said this here before, I don't think there is a single act or event that we are debating or discussing right now, or have for at least as long as my memory can go back, that should or could be compared to the tragedy of the Holocaust. I think whenever that's offered up into a public debate, it is a sign that things have gotten, for those that enter into it, completely out of hand. It has absolutely no place in the dialogue that we're having. We ought to be able, as the President said, have conversations with one another, not over one another. And the notion that we're having a public policy debate at the end of a spray paint can on somebody's sign, I think is ridiculous. And I think anybody, again, who offers up that sort of analogy is ought to be ashamed of themselves, because they could not be more in the wrong.
There'd be more sensitivity not just on the Jewish component, but also on the ethnic component, as well as talking about black, Hispanic.
I think the president would tell you, as he said countless times, and as I've repeated hundreds of times, we ought to be able to disagree without being disagreeable. We ought to be able to have a conversation, even a debate, about issues that are out there that don't result in the type of degrading comments or actions like you've referenced. Thanks, Jess.